And then one day I was picking my wife up at the train station in England. It was pouring down with rain, and we were just stuck in traffic, and we were just chatting. And somewhere in the conversation, one of us said, "I wonder if Elizabeth will be the last queen," as in right to the throne, not a queen as in because she'd married a king. And we both paused and thought, that would be a really good name for the pub, wouldn't it?
Welcome, and thank you for listening to the NextGen podcast, a conversational series with members from Energen Wealth Partners at UBS. With an understanding of the family dynamics that can accompany multi-generational wealth, we are experienced in working with you and your family to develop a strategic plan to guide your decisions. Our approach helps provide education across generations to help define and support your long-term vision for your wealth.
Hello, and welcome to the NextGen podcast. I'm your host, Brandi Rochelle, financial advisor with Energen Wealth Partners here at UBS Financial Services. Our office is located in Dayton, Ohio, and you can reach us at energen@ubs.com. Today, we're going to explore the world of culinary arts with a special guest who has been making a significant impact in the restaurant scene. We'll be diving into his journey and the inspiration behind his dishes. His dedication to exceptional food and community has transformed his restaurant into a beloved local gem. Please welcome Adrian Schergel, the owner of The Last Queen Restaurant in Enon, Ohio. Adrian, it's a pleasure to have you here on the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I wanted to just introduce everybody to Adrian. Adrian, I met at his gastro pub in Enon, and I was very intrigued. The atmosphere was amazing. Everybody there felt like family. And I wanted to get the backstory on how we ended up with a British pub in Enon, Ohio.
Yeah, so it's a pretty strange place to end up with a British pub, isn't it?
Yes.
Maybe if I was in a different part of America, it'd be a bit more obvious. My wife was an Air Force child. So obviously she shifted around every so many years, and she had family at Wright Pat, and Enon happened to be the town or the village that was where they were located. And that was really the draw of that space.
Awesome. And how did you two meet?
Maggie and I met, I think we were working on a summer camp. Yeah, a few years ago.
And your career history, you were a teacher.
Yeah, so I worked for social services for a while, and then I moved out of social services and I went into high school teaching.
That's amazing. And you're from?
I'm from the UK. I'm from the south, most southern part. If you were any more south, you'd be in the sea. The town that I grew up in is Southampton, which is infamous for the Titanic.
Wow. So as you say infamous, does that have any inspiration into the restaurant?
Well, I hope
the pub?
We don't sink. I think that's why I use the word infamous, I suppose.
The goal is not to sink.
Yeah.
So when did the restaurant open?
So we opened in, and I've got to get my years right, to April 2022. So we're just about to hit year three next month, isn't it? Yeah,
that's
we're March.
Amazing. An big anniversary party plan?
Possibly. We tend to take each thing at a time. So we only look really about a week or two ahead. Otherwise, things can get very overwhelming.
So April of 2022. So you saw a lot of restaurants and what happened during the pandemic, and that didn't deter you from opening a restaurant.
So we did start the sort of organizing during the pandemic, but we hadn't really gone full head into it. So we just paused. So we were in a fortunate situation in that sense. So we paused when everything kind of started settling down, and then we went back into it.
So how does a high school teacher go into being an owner of a gastropub?
Yeah, it's a strange one, isn't it? There's a song by Nick Drake, and he sort of talks about, if I'd done this first, I could have been one of these things first. And I have three girls, and they joke that I've shifted around in different hemispheres work-wise a few times, but this is probably the bigger shift. I've always had a passion for food from a very young age. I love my wife. She's amazing. She's not a cook.
Neither am I.
But it's a good team thing. So I've always cooked in our house, and I just take a lot of care into what I put inside my body. I joke with my family that I don't mind driving a peasant's car, but I'm not going to eat like a peasant. So really that ethos of wanting to provide sort of really good food has always been in the back of my mind.
That's amazing. So what is the difference between a gastropub and a pub?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I might have my information slightly blurred here, but I believe one of the turning points of pubs becoming gastropubs might have had something to do with a famous British chef that shouts a lot, Gordon Ramsay. Oh. And somewhere in his stage, I think he goes to a pub and obviously he's not happy with their food and he shows them how to do stuff and then their food is elevated and then I guess it's a snowball effect that other pubs thought, oh, hang on, we can really elevate our space here. So again, it might not have been him per se, but I think when you have somebody, big celebrity like that on TV that's doing that, it tends to capture people's attention. So I think it was this idea of pub food has always been seen as sort of very affordable. And then the idea of doing a gastro pub is it's not five star, but it's not cheap. So it's kind of that in between good quality, but somewhat affordable, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that you definitely see that on your pub when you look at your at the gastropub, when you look at your menu and the items that are on there, they're not normal, typical bar food. Sure. It is elevated.
Yeah.
And I also heard there's a difference between an American pub and a British pub.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I suppose when you think of places to drink in America, that you sort of tend to refer to them as bars, don't you? Mm-hmm. So the idea behind a pub, any village in Britain will have a church and it will have a pub. And they're usually at the centre of the village or the centre of the town. And the concept comes from way, way back in the day. And we're talking, you know, literally hundreds of years ago. I believe there is a pub in a town near me in Winchester that's something like 800 years old. Again, don't quote me on that. It's ridiculously old. And the idea was is that people couldn't afford to have people around their house. So they allocated a space in the village where people could go and drink and just gather without, you know, infringing on a individual. And so the pub is actually short for a public house. So that's where the concept comes from. And then they're supposed to be a home from home kind of concept and space.
So the home away from home to hang out with your friends and family without messing up your own house.
Right. And then also having the freedom to leave when you want to leave and you're not overstaying and all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Perfect. I think you guys have done a good job in creating that type of atmosphere. Now, it's a cozy pub, British pub, right? There's not a lot of tables, but when the summertime hits, we get to expand out to the patio.
Yeah, and that's very kind of you to say that. It's always lovely to hear that we have that atmosphere where people feel welcome and feel like it's a home from home and everyone's family and friends. So that is really, when I hear that, that's like a big tick for us because that was very much part of the concept of wanting to do that. And you're right, yeah. So when the weather gets good, we can open up the patio. I can't wait for that because I know the winter started late, but I'm happy for it to end now.
And me too. We have definitely had a true winter this time.
We sure have.
Now, when it comes to the food and the kitchen, are you the chef?
I think the first year that we were open, I was in the back of the house. So for the first solid 12 months, I was working the kitchen, I was running the kitchen. But I think you have to start stepping away. In any good restaurant, I think what you do is you get the right people, you train the right people, and it's about, you know, reproducing what you are doing and getting people to reproduce that. Because if you don't do that, then you're forever reliant on yourself and you're forever stuck behind them. So I'll be honest with you now, I very rarely go into the kitchen. I'm happy to do it. I will go in there. And I'll occasionally, as things have got better and better and better, and our stand, I mean, we've got some great chefs. And I just want to give a shout out, because I do. I really, hand on heart, I am very grateful for the chefs that we have in the back of the house. They're amazing. And they execute our concept really, really well. But I tend not to go in there too much now because I don't want to tread on anyone's toes. But if I see something needs to be fixed or something needs to be checked, I'll go in there at some point and they're very open to listening to me or watching me.
That's amazing. So you've got a good staff behind you and you can definitely taste it in the food that they care about what they're doing.
They
want to serve good quality food.
Yeah.
And you work with a lot of local farmers and producers in this area for the food that you use to create your dishes.
Yeah, we try and get as much as we can. I'd like to get more, but it's about supply. And so things have to be, obviously, if you're running a pub, you try and want things as consistent as possible. But yeah, as much as we can get. And we're also we're always looking to get more. I think it's one of those things that you don't always know somebody sells something local that you are buying, and then someone will tell you about it.
Yes.
So we're actually in a space right now where we really are hopeful of getting locally grown potatoes. And that's a big thing for us to want to do.
Your chips are delicious.
Thank you. Yeah.
So that's a big one. We have to have good quality potatoes to make those chips because they're so good. So would you say that's your most popular dish? Is it the fish and chips?
Yeah, fish and chips by far. I think it's because it resonates, doesn't it, as a sort of classic British dinner. So yeah, it is. It is the biggest selling.
That's wonderful. And you still have a lot of input into the menu and adding items or?
Yeah, I mean, we have a general manager, Matt, who's fantastic as well. And our executive chef is also Matt. They're both brilliant people. And so I interact with them on whether we're looking at, you know, just doing a special or something new. I'm very much a part of that conversation. So we'll tend to talk about it as a team as opposed to one particular person, because they might have a really good idea and I might go, oh, that's really good. And then we kind of work it together as a team.
That's wonderful. And I think another traditional dish, I think of bangers and mash.
Bangers and mash. We have a pig raised for us and the butchers make our bangers. And
that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's why they taste so good. Now, I think of afternoon high teas. I've not been able to experience one. What does that kind of look like? Does that get a lot of attention for you guys?
Yeah, it does. That was a surprise, really. That wasn't necessarily in the thinking when we opened the pub. It was my wife's idea to do it when it was the Queen's Jubilee. And so she wanted to do something special. And so she just put it out on Facebook saying we're going to do these tea. It's not technically a high tea. It's an afternoon tea. And I just say that because there may be people that go on technicalities.
Okay, so I didn't know there was a difference.
It's a very small technicality, which we don't need to get into it. But it is an afternoon tea and it's a classic afternoon tea. So we did that. Well, my wife organized that for the Queen's Jubilee. And then sadly, the first year that we were open, the Queen died. And then we wanted to do something to celebrate her life. So we did two in the space of how many months? And then people were just saying, well, when's the next one? And we were like, oh, well, we could do one here. And then it became a monthly thing. And then we were booked out 2 or 3 months in advance. And now we do 2 a month. And we're usually booked out. So it's kind of taken a life of its own, which is nice.
That's amazing. And I think, are you working on getting a space just for that or for special events that you would rent out at the gastropub?
Yeah. So it's a lot of pressure on the pub. And we're happy to do it and we're glad we can do it. And, you know, it's a fun thing to do because it's such a lovely, different experience. And, you know, when the lady, I say ladies, so there are gentlemen that come in as well. I say 90% ladies come in and it's nice when they wear the hats and then they dress up. It's lovely. So to take some of the pressure off the pub, we're going to build a whole new tea room right next door. And it will be a tea room, not a pub.
Okay.
So it will be a little bit more classic. But in the morning, it will be like a tea and coffee shop. And we will make fresh pastries there, croissants and bread. And then we'll also be able to rent it out for like catering as well.
That's amazing. I think that'll be a big win for you guys.
Hopefully.
Yes, yeah. It's a lot of work. Because you thought after opening the gastropub, you were done opening almost a whole nother business to be opening the tea room.
Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is a whole new project, but it's fun.
It is fun.
Excited to do it.
So you can tell that you are energized by it. So this is what you were meant to do.
It's strange when you take such a shift of a line of work, but yeah, I love it. Yeah, I really like it.
That's awesome. Yeah. Now, I think I heard a story about your opening day for the gastropub. It was a little bit of a crazy time. Can you share with how that went?
Yeah. If my wife and I ever write a like memoir, I mean, it was the classic, this cannot happen on your first day. So remember, we've never done this in our lives before. We'd done a little soft opening with friends and family, which is slightly different because everyone kind of, you know, everybody. And then, and so the, you know, you're not quite so stressed because everyone accepts that this is a
soft opening.
It's a soft opening and it's people that you know. But yeah, so the day that we officially opened, it was very, very busy because I think like most new places you get hit. And I can't remember whether it was 5 minutes in or 10 minutes in how our point of sale system went down.
Oh, no.
And you rely, because we'd set everything up for the new electronic system with the screens in the back of the house and everyone. And it was just chaos. And so we figured out a way of printing the
tickets.
Yeah. And we had very inexperienced staff. And it was a nightmare. But we brushed ourselves off and
persevered,
carried on the next day.
That's amazing. So when you think back, were there particular people that stood out that helped you along the way to where you are today?
Yeah. So we had an amazing restaurant consultant. She won't mind me shouting out her name. Her name was Teresa Peretta. And I think what she brought to the table wasn't just her knowledge, but her sort of confidence in us. And I think when you've got somebody that believes in what you're doing and encourages you to be true to what you're doing, I think when you're going into something so blind, because you don't know what you don't know. Okay. So Teresa Peretta was fantastic. I also want to give a massive shout out to SBDC, which is the Small Business Bureau. There's bunches around. We work predominantly with Springfield, but they also connected us with Teresa in the Miami Valley.
Awesome. So they help is it just restaurants or it's just any small business?
Anything. So, I mean, whether you're looking for a bookkeeper or an accountant or advertising or anything like that, SBDC will find somebody and plug you in. And there, the time that you have with that individual is free. I mean, I've said to people, don't start a business without contacting your local SBDC, even if you don't use them much, just at least.
So that would be your one word of advice to anybody who's dreamed of opening any type of business.
It makes sense, yeah. Because you can talk to people that have done stuff for years.
And learn from their mistakes.
Exactly.
Now, The Last Queen. Now, how did that name become the name of your gastropub?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that's a question we get asked quite a lot, which is nice, actually. I like being asked that question. So there's my wife and I have three girls, and we agreed that the name that we'd come up with, the pub, that we all agree on it. And so that's what we decided. And this must have gone on for well over a year. We'd come up with various names. We'd put the name in a hat. Somebody would come home from school or college or work, and they go, I've got this name, I've got this name. And then two of us would be like, nah. And so we'd get shot down. And then one day I was picking my wife up at the train station in England. It was pouring down with rain, and we were just stuck in traffic, and we were just chatting. And somewhere in the conversation, one of us said, I wonder if Elizabeth will be the last queen, as in right to the throne, not a queen as in because she'd married a king. And we both paused and thought, that would be a really good name for the pub, wouldn't it?
It is.
And that's pretty much how the name came about.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Well, I was going to say, as for anybody who's never been to The Last Queen, it's a gem. It's small, but it has a lot of heart. You walk in, the atmosphere is cozy, it's welcoming. How did you manage to create such a good environment and have such good, genuinely good, caring staff there?
That's a tricky one to say, because it could sound quite egotistical, wouldn't it, if I answer that? Oh, so I'm just such a warm, loving guy. I don't know. I think we've been blessed. I'm a big believer in our family. Our faith is very important to us. So I think we went into this wanting to have a heart where everyone was welcome and that people felt not just like a pseudo welcome, but genuine, like this is a place. I would see it like you go into a place and you have a vacation for an hour or an hour and a half. So you enter our building and you leave all your troubles behind, and you enter a space that is warm, that is relaxing, and you hire people with that same ethos, that have that genuine energy of wanting to be hospitable and want people to have a good time. And so I think it's twofold. I think it was on our radar to make, that was very, very important. And then I think we've been fortunate to find the right people over time to really buy into that, to trickle down.
That's amazing. Now you have three girls. Do they have any inclination to continue on with a family business, to take over someday, to be a part of it, or they're all still in school?
Only if I force them. They tease me whenever they're in town. They'll go, "Dad, you always get us to work." And I go, "Yeah, I know. I'm sorry about that." So our oldest gets married this year. She's moved back to the UK. So I think I don't think she's going to be following the family business, but you never know. She graduated last year. And our middle child, Ella, she graduates. So Lily is my oldest, who I don't think will be following the business. Ella, our middle child, who graduates this May. I think I've lured her into helping us run the tea room and coffee shop.
Oh, congrats.
For a short period of time. And our younger Zoe teases me that one day she will own it and run it.
Oh, well, I like that. Go, Zoe.
There you go.
Now, are there any dishes named after the girls?
Yeah, there's a bunch of dishes named after different people. So when I was teaching, one of my students came up to me and said, "Would you name one of your menus after me?" He was a very engaging kid. He loved to debate, and he loved America. So I named the Jaffet burger after him, because that's the kind of quintessential American burger.
I love it.
And then there are other students scattered around, and then my kids were also scattered in there.
That's awesome. And there's a curry on the menu. Is that a recipe that you have input to, or is there a reason, in addition to being a British pub, that we have a good curry on the menu?
Yeah, so any good pub in Britain should have at least a curry once or twice a week. So curry is superseded fish and chips. I'm also half Indian, so I was raised with a lot of Indian food. So, and it's our recipe. Yeah, it's a real curry. Yeah.
Perfect. So a lot of inspiration from family who passed down their recipes to you that you've brought to us.
Yeah. If you've ever seen or heard of Indian weddings, these things are pretty outrageous. And I was so curious from a young age watching, and I'm not being sexist, but most of the time it was the women that were doing the cooking. I'll be honest with you. Occasionally there were men, but most of the time. And I would watch them, and they were very gracious enough to sort of like pull me over and go, come on, watch us. And so I was lucky enough to get like firsthand experience on how to get at least the framework of Indian cooking.
That's awesome. So definitely, that's another one on my list to try. I've knocked a couple of menu items off. The toffee pudding dessert. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
That's amazing, isn't it?
It is. I have to share. It's a little bit goes a long way, but it's so good.
Yeah, it's not very healthy for you, but it sure does taste good. I joke with people and say, look, if you have the sticky toffee pudding to yourself and you do have a heart attack, you'll die smiling. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that.
That is true.
No, but it's gorgeous.
Well, for any of our listeners who kind of need a little help finding you, could you give some information on how to find you in Enon?
Yeah. So if you're coming from sort of Dayton or this area down in Miamisburg, and you're coming south, you go up 675 and then you come off the Enon exit, or you can actually go up to 70 and then take 675, 70, and then you'll see the Enon exit on 4. And then if you're coming from Columbus, then you just jump on 70, and we are like half a mile from 70. We are not easy to see or spot. People call us a hidden gem, and we are somewhat hidden. However, we do have a double-decker bus, a British double-decker bus. So if you see that next to the gas station, you are in walking distance of the pub.
Double-decker bus. Any thoughts of having a food truck with that?
Well, we've gutted it, and we'll put tables and chairs upstairs, and so we might do like rent that out for people to do teas and maybe their own little private party in there. Yeah.
Awesome. And then the tea room will also be known as the Last Queen?
No.
Oh.
We haven't officially shared the name of the tea room yet, but it is a very clever name, and it is a reference to the Queen, but it won't be obvious.
I can't wait. And when do we think that will be open, or a target date for that opening?
Yeah, some of it's kind of out of our hands now. But if I'm being optimistic, I'd like to say July.
I love it. All right. Well, I thank you so much for your time. I'm just going to say again, And my family, we love The Last Queen.
Thank you.
I want more people to know about it. Maybe I shouldn't want that because that means more of a wait for me when I go there. But it's a hidden gem, as you said earlier, that needs to be shared.
Yeah, no, shout out Off From The Roots Hops. That's good. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, it's been a pleasure to learn more about The Last Queen and your passion for food and community. To our listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Next Gen Podcast. Don't forget to check out The Last Queen restaurant in Enon, Ohio, if you are a local. And stay tuned for our next episode. Until next time, cheers to great food and even better company.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Next Gen Podcast. To learn more about our team and to join our exclusive educational events throughout the year, check out our website at advisors.ubs.com/Energen. If you have any suggestions on episodes you'd like to hear, let us know by emailing us at energen@ubs.com. And if you liked this episode, be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify to hear more. This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of any offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we recommend listeners to obtain appropriate and independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Incorporated offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct our business and that you carefully read agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products and services we offer. For more information, please review Client Relationship Summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Incorporated is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.